What do you believe the Phoenix process is?
I'm really envisioning like a, did you watch Game of Thrones?
Mm-hmm.
Like a Khaleesi coming out of the fire with the born dragons. And then she's in that moment, she literally physically comes out of a fire.
Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka.
And today we're going to talk about the Phoenix process. Bean, are you ready?
Ready as ever.
What's up, Bean?
What's shaking? What's clack-a-lackin'?
What's shaking? It's cloudy here today.
Oh, it's actually sunny here, so I'm sorry to hear that for you.
That's nice. I get happy when you have nice weather on the East Coast because we can't hog all the sun.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's nice, but I would say it's sunny.
Oh, okay.
And we did go to the 60s this week, so that's a real flippin' treat.
That's exciting.
Honestly, I'm just going to use that intro right into my – do you want me to just get right into it? That was basically my delight.
The weather? I'm going to need you to work on these.
Well, I feel like I was being really cringy, and it got so warm this week that I actually swapped in my closet my tank tops where my sweaters were, which truthfully is like a – yeah, it's symbolism, I feel like, right? Like it's prepping for spring and the rebirth, which is actually an excellent intro into our topic as well. But first, I would encourage you to share your cringe or delight.
Well, my cringe is that your delight is the weather. And next week, I need you to do better. My
East Coast. Weather's a big deal. Okay.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
It is.
Okay. I have a cringe story for you.
Mm-hmm.
Another one where I almost texted you and then I was like, I can't. I got to save it for Friday.
Oh, no.
So I take my youngest, Keon, to downtown to go shopping. He's going to a bar mitzvah. He's flying to DC by himself today, my baby. So, and he has like no, he's a 13-year-old boy. So just try to imagine what kind of clothes he has available. So we're, you know, going to go shopping on Tuesday. So I take him downtown and I am adamant about, you know this about me, parking on the street. I don't like parking in parking garages. I think it's a waste of money. I think street parking is so available. And it's just, I think I get excited about the hunt.
And I will add, you have the most remarkable parking karma I have ever encountered in my life.
I agree with you.
It's the gods open up. They open it up for you.
It's pretty magical.
Yeah.
So we pull up and there's a spot, but the spot is like on the end right before the curb turns into an entry point to like, you know, a shopping center. And there's a little Mini Cooper in front of me who has like, I want to say 10 feet of space in front of him. And he's sitting in his car. So in order for us to be able to park where we want to park, he would just need to scoot up like, I'm not even kidding you, 2 feet. Just 2 feet. He's just sitting in his car. So I say, you know, I'm what, Keon, just hold on a minute. Just stay here. Put my flashers on behind him. I'm just going to just run over and just be like, sorry, could you just scoot up just 2 feet? What would you do if someone asked you to do that?
Sure. No problem.
Right?
Yeah. I probably end up apologizing for like not being parked correctly.
Right. So exactly. I would be like, oh my God, my bad. There's all this space in front of me that I'm taking up. Okay. So I knock. He like looks at me kind of shadily, rolls down his window. And I say, and I do this. I hate that I do this. I think a lot of women do this. My voice goes higher when I'm trying to, you know, like you try to get a little like, I don't know. It's so annoying.
Hi. And
I hate it. So I did that to be extra pleasant. Mm-hmm. Do you mind just scooting forward 2 feet so we can fit behind you? If I do that, you're going to box me in. Well, no, because there's a ton of space in front of you. So I, you know, I'm sure that you won't get boxed in. Well, actually, you need to really be careful parking there because that space is going to have, and he just, and I literally
just walk away,
literally lost my cool. I go, excuse me, I'm asking you whether you can scoot up 2 feet, not for a lecture. Is the answer yes or no?
Honestly, that's a delight. I am impressed. That is not cringy.
He goes, well, I'm leaving anyway. I was like, wonderful.
So why did he waste his angry time arguing, right?
Arguing, like mansplaining a parking space to me. You don't think I know what it's like when a car is leaving a space and it might hit my bumper? Like, come on, dude. And I'm standing in the middle of the street. My kid's in the car. You're explaining this shit to me? No, thank you. So
I'm not really cringed out by that. I'm delighted. I'm delighted that you asserted yourself and didn't allow him to bulldoze you in that fashion.
It was, I think what's cringy is that people believe that they can be entitled enough to freaking react like that when you're trying to just park your car and go buy some khakis.
I think what's cringy is this gigantic pimple on my almost 42-year-old head. Like, haven't I gone through enough acne?
It's not that visible.
Yeah.
Well, now I can see it.
Yeah.
The light's hitting it quite.
Yeah.
You see it's that? Supple.
Oh, thank you. I love that. Thank you. Anyways,
let's go back to the transition you were doing. You were talking about rebirth. Right.
Good weather, rebirth, but also I have pimples. But it's going to rebirth into clear skin as the spring comes and we get some more sunshine on our faces and we're reborn and we feel hopeful again. That's how I feel about spring on the East Coast.
Me too.
Honestly.
But I'm trying to figure out how you're transitioning this to our topic. Please.
Continue. Oh, because we're talking about the Phoenix process today, which I actually know very little about. So you're welcome. So everyone tune in and listen and learn to me not knowing anything. And then I know though, basically it's you kind of rise up again and it's like a sort of like a rebirth, much like the spring.
Beautiful. That's a good job.
Thanks.
A+ transition, A- transition.
I would give it a B+, but thank you.
Oh, okay. I'm kinder to you than you are to yourself. Surprise, surprise. So Phoenix process. So why did we want to talk about the Phoenix process and how is this going to be useful to our listeners, as we always like to say up top at the show? The Phoenix process is such an important part of the self-actualization journey, this journey that we all are on to identify who we are really, what our truth is, and live in that truth unabashedly so that we can be in our purpose and we can be fulfilled and we can be connected to ourselves and to each other. And so along this journey, all of us go through this process, but I think many of us don't understand the process. And so my goal in wanting to talk about it today is to enlighten us around what happens when you're in the Phoenix process so that you have some language about it. I always think that when you understand what you're going through, it's a little less terrifying. Agreed.
Even when it's hard.
Yeah. And then also you feel seen and you feel like you're not alone, because Bean and I are going to talk about some of our Phoenix processes in life.
Yes.
And then you hopefully can also see that, you know, if there's a pathway in, there's a pathway out. And we'll talk about the pathway out of the Phoenix process. So I thought we could do a little of that. Yeah?
Yeah. I feel like this is going to be more of an education session for me as well.
Excellent. So then let's start by asking you, Bean,
What
do you believe the Phoenix process is?
Well, I feel like I just lightly touched on it, but I'm really envisioning like a did you watch Game of Thrones?
Mm-hmm.
Like a Khaleesi sort of coming out of the fire with the born dragons. And then she is in that moment, she literally physically comes out of a fire. And I know there's some reference to the Phoenix rising from the ashes, which probably is what took me there. And she is sort of, she comes out of the fire that was for her husband's funeral. And then she is reborn as Mother of Dragons because she brought these dragons to life.
That's such a good analogy. That is a really a good example of Phoenix process in film or TV. That was really good.
Oh, thanks.
So yeah, the Phoenix process basically is this idea that, you know, as things in our lives fall apart that we have constructed, that from that falling apart, we are able, if we so choose, to use that opportunity to rebuild ourselves in a more expanded, more powerful, stronger, dignified way that allows us to move forward in our lives and achieve what we want with better alignment. So it's like we used to say when we did crisis management, every crisis is an opportunity.
Right.
It's this idea that when your life feels like it's falling apart, going into the flow of that falling apart, like, and coming out of that, of those ashes, or rising out of those ashes at a higher frequency than when you went in. And the concept of Phoenix comes from mythology. So I was going to tell you a little story to start us off.
I'm ready.
Okay. So the Phoenix is actually a bird that you see, a mythological bird that you see in a lot of traditions, particularly in Egyptian mythology. It shows up a lot, but it also shows up in Greek mythology. I was delighted to find that it is also really big in ancient Persian mythology too.
Delightful.
It's also delightful in native stories. And what's really cool is that in all of these cultures, totally disparate, the story is pretty much the same.
Right.
I'm going to tell you the Egyptian myth around the Phoenix. So according to this legend, the Phoenix, this bird, originally lived in paradise. and it was immortal, and it knew that it would live forever. But after thousands of years of living in paradise, the phoenix gets bored with paradise and wants a new life. So it leaves paradise and it travels to the mortal world, which is governed by the energies of life and death, because now it wants to experience those things.
Right.
When it's here, the phoenix realizes that he couldn't die, but wants to renew himself. So what he does is he builds a nest over time. He's building this nest as he's here on the mortal plane. And he waits for the sun god Ra, again, this is Egyptian mythology, to arrive. When the sun god Ra arrives, he drives his chariot across the sky. The phoenix sings to get his attention. And as Ra is listening and is enchanted by the song, he stops his chariot and a spark from his chariot, remember he's the sun god, falls and sets the nest that the phoenix built alight on fire, engulfed in flames. And engulfed in flames, the nest goes up in flames, the phoenix goes up in flames. But since the phoenix was a magical and immortal bird, after 3 days, he's reborn from the ashes and he lives on repeating the cycle of life and rebirth every 1,000 years. So in Egyptian mythology, they believe the phoenix comes back every 1,000 years and that this is the cycle of being reborn from the ashes.
Ooh, that's a lot of work every 1,000 years, I feel like.
Right?
Poor guy.
But yeah, the idea is that, you know, he's trying to end, he wants to experience not being immortal. He's trying to end it. He sets this nest on fire. He goes up in flames. Everything he's built goes up in flames, but he rises from those ashes, even more magical.
Yeah, he does.
Greeks talked about the phoenix from this idea of, they talk a lot about the transmigration of the soul and believing that there's more to a person's soul after death. And so they talk about this same myth, but in that vein of, you know, even if your body dies, your soul continues to rise and live on forever from this idea of the phoenix process. In native cultures, the phoenix was called the thunder bird. It's a large, colorful bird, and it has healing powers for humans. Yeah,
thunder bird. That's the same as the phoenix? Oh, who knew?
In native cultures, yeah. And it regenerates the earth by bringing rain. And it was also the first image depicted on the Great Seal of the newly reborn United States of America in 1782 after the War of Independence from Britain. So another symbol of rising from the ashes to become something wonderful. Oh, that's just a little mythology about the phoenix.
I liked it.
I thought it was relevant because it really is the core of why we call this process of parts of our lives falling apart the phoenix process. It's related to these myths. Yay. So with that said,
yes,
I want to ask you a question.
Please.
If you think about this analogy to the phoenix process, when has there been a moment in your life where you feel like you've had a significant phoenix process?
One, can I ask a quick question? Can you go through multiple phoenix processes throughout your life?
Yes.
I mean, I can't really think back that far because I have a really shitty memory. But the thing that comes to mind immediately is actually very recent for me. In December of 22, I had major foot surgery. I had injured my foot a year and a half prior and had been completely unable to function in the way I had been functioning my whole life because I wasn't able to walk very far. So everything to me became about my foot. It was, I couldn't park at the grocery store too far away because I couldn't use the steps. Mm-hmm. And in that fashion, because I needed to be able to have enough steps in the day to get everything done, but my foot would only last for so long without being in severe pain. So my whole life, it was really, I guess, it started with the fall when I hurt my foot, which was like I just missed one step in my basement and I tore like every ligament in my foot. I had all this tendon damage. It was just one simple step, which I actually ended up using as like symbolism for my life, like how everything can shift in a second and how you should be mindful of that and how there's the before and after. Anyway, all of this went on. I tried so many therapies, alternative Western medicine. I tried everything under the sun. Nothing fixed it. I made the decision to have massive foot surgery, which put me out of commission for, I can't remember. I was bedridden for like 7 weeks maybe.
Yeah.
It was a long time. And it was basically, it was a lot of prep going into it and it was a lot of emotional work. And then I basically sat on the sidelines of my life for 7 weeks, 8 weeks. And even when I was able to walk, I was only allowed to walk minimally. So it was really about a 3-month process of me kind of just sitting back. And first of all, I had so much time to think, so much time. There was nothing to keep me busy during the day because I couldn't move. So I just thought about everything I had experienced up until that point. I watched my entire life from the sidelines, which I have to tell you was almost horrifying in some ways, glorious in other ways. Like it was really like having a front row to my own life. It was very bizarre. And I think I learned in there like where my true support comes from, where my lack of support in life comes from, you know, people who say they'll step up. And I think it just gave me a ton of clarity around my entire world. And I think then also when I left and I was able, when I was healed and I was able to walk again, it gave me a new perspective again. Like, wow, now I can walk. Now I can do this. And I feel like last year became my year of a lot of growth for me. Not only was I transitioning with my kids starting full-time school, but I had this newfound like, oh, I can walk, I can exercise again, I can do all these things that I couldn't do that I now appreciate so much. And I realize how meaningful it is to have your health and your well-being and your mental well-being, because I was in a very dark place for those several months, probably the darkest of my life.
Agree.
And I feel like I kind of rose out of it. And then I started doing this podcast, and then a couple other things came out. And anyway, that would be the most recent Phoenix process. And honestly, the only one I can really pinpoint in my life.
I love that you said that I was on the sidelines of my life. There's nothing more clarifying than that experience where it feels like everything is in like slow motion and you're watching it from the side and you're starting to say to yourself, wait a minute, like I constructed this thing.
Correct.
Do I like this thing I constructed? Oh, maybe I don't like this part, and this part needs to fall away, which is so Phoenix process. This part needs to burn away for it to evolve to something greater.
Yes. It gave me the perspective of clarity, honestly. On that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
You? Give me a good one. I mean, I know you're divorced for sure.
Yeah.
I witness it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that to go a level deeper, obviously divorce is a Phoenix process.
Right.
The loss of a job is a Phoenix process. The loss of a parent is a Phoenix process. You know, any kind of loss is a Phoenix process. Any kind of dramatic, drastic change is a process where things burn down and you have to rebuild them. I think the reason that my divorce feels like such a clear Phoenix process is when I think about this Phoenix building its nest.
Right.
That was what my marriage was. It was this ideal I had, of this nuclear family that I didn't get to grow up in because my parents were divorced. So I had this insistence on building this nuclear family. Right. And I forced a lot of it. I say in my book, my ex-husband at the time when I wanted to get married said to me, I know I shouldn't get married till I'm 30. I just know that I'm not going to be like mentally prepared for everything that comes with it. And I couldn't hear that. I needed the life that I wanted because that to me was safety. And, you know, I think ultimately really created a lot of pressure for him to, you know, for us to get married. We got married young. We got married at 25. And I really wanted to build this nest. I wanted a certain kind of house in a very specific neighborhood. I wanted a boy and a girl. I wanted them to go to a certain daycare. Like there was all of these things I had constructed in my mind. Right. I say we construct these sets out of cardboard to match what is our, you know, told to us by the external culture is what good looks like. And I was really attempting to do that to build security. And we did it and, you know, had the two kids. And, you know, by the time the youngest was 11 months old, that entire nest blew up in flames.
Yeah.
Everything was engulfed in flames and our marriage just disintegrated. And I, you know, I chose to leave the marriage, which was also really destabilizing for my ex-husband because, you know, he had said not a good idea, then obviously was very happy in this life and trying. Right. And for a lot of reasons, it was not tenable to be in that marriage. And so with two young kids, I mean, my daughter was 3, my son was 11 months old, I left the marriage. And everything that I had constructed just completely burned to the ground. There was all of a sudden I was the single mom I didn't want to be. All of a sudden we had to move to a different house. You know, all of a sudden the kids, you know, had to accept a different level of care while I figured out the finances. And I suddenly was left with okay, so all of these things you constructed out of idealism have burned down. And from those ashes, sifting through to find the gold, which is, what is your truth here?
Right.
Who are you when you're not trying to build a life that matches, you know, the normative good that you see in a nuclear family on TV? But what are you? And I started to realize, oh my goodness, I am actually the exact opposite of so much. I am someone who values freedom above all else. I don't value routine. I don't value normativity, really. I don't value staying silent. I value speaking up. And from that place, my entire life changed and I changed dramatically. I became so much more outspoken. That's how I got onto my path of being a coach and a teacher and a healer, because I started to really go on this journey of figuring out, who are you when all this other stuff burns away? What is your truth? And it was life-changing for me. I mean, I think it was the ultimate Phoenix process.
I wonder how many people succumb, though, to that process and can't find the gold and can't sift through, and they just are like completely incapacitated by it.
I think it's so true that, you know, there's lots of people that get stuck in the darkness of the darkest part of the Phoenix process. I think because, and that's why I'm so passionate about talking about it, because we don't realize, no, this is a rebuild moment. This isn't, you know, I think that what's really important in the work that I do and this being part of it is, yes, you can see everything as happening to you. And therefore, you are completely powerless in what you do in response. Or you can see it as something you're co-creating. Like, if you hear me tell this story, you hear me tell a lot, take a lot of accountability for how I forced a life in order to create safety. That's something I'm accountable for. When you force a life and you build it out of cardboard, of course it's going to, you know, fall to the ground easily. So I think that when you're in that mindset of, this is happening to me, it's really easy to get stuck there, because then you feel so powerless about what to do. But if you can reframe it to, how did I co-create this? And what is this allowing me to learn about myself? And most importantly, what is the truth, the deepest, deepest truth about me that I was trying to ignore or hide in building this life that fell apart, or accepting this job that got taken away, or being in this relationship that didn't serve me? Those things fall away because they are not in your highest good. Always. Always.
I still think it's hard to still find what is my inner truth, even with all of that stuff falling away. I still even feel like I'm just still slowly rising from the ashes from December of 2022. Like, this is all part of my rising.
Yeah. And it's not overnight. I mean, I think that's a really important point.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. When I say that started a journey, I'm talking, it started a 5-6 year journey.
Right.
It wasn't overnight that I suddenly, oh, okay, my marriage is over. Now I'm a successful coach and writing a book. I mean, that took forever.
Right.
So you're right. It does take time. But my point is, you have to see it as an opportunity to get to what is the truest desire within you and the truest ideals within you that align to you, not anyone else, and refuse to live your life any other way, but in line with your truth.
And I think I like almost physically felt a shift as well. Like, there was some indication to me, like, something isn't sitting well right now.
Right.
I think it was really the silence and the stillness that allowed me to feel it, because I don't know if I was really aware, but I was like, something has to give here. Something needs to shift in your life, because watching it from here.
Right.
Anyway, so there, I understand there are stages.
Yeah. Again, let's follow the story of the Phoenix. The first stage of the Phoenix process is building the nest.
Right.
So think about, what have you constructed in your life that is not fully in reflection to who you are really? What have you assimilated to fit in or create belonging? What have you built around you to create safety that isn't fully allowing you to be your most expanded self? How are you shrinking in your life? What relationships, what situations are causing you to be smaller than is your truth?
Right.
That is the nest building stage, right? Then the stage of it becoming engulfed in flames. That stage is when something radical happens. You know, you put your foot wrong, the foot breaks. Your marriage ends. You get fired suddenly overnight, right? Like that moment of change,
right,
that is right, unexpected, that takes that thing you constructed that wasn't in your truth, that wasn't to your greatest good, and starts to make it fall apart. And then there's the stage of it falling apart. And that is a lot of loss and a lot of grief and a lot of fear that we go through in that stage of the Phoenix process, where we feel so out of control because we try so hard to grasp at what's falling away and reconstruct it in the exact image that it was before. Right. And by the way, remember, the whole function of the Phoenix process is no, it didn't serve your truth, so it has to go away. But in this stage where it's falling away, we can tend to grasp at it and we can tend to get very desperate and fearful, which is just human, because we really crave safety.
Then you're also in this particularly vulnerable state in addition to that, which makes you crave safety even harder.
Absolutely. Like, I can tell you, for me in that process, it was like the guys that I dated after I got divorced were so, I mean, you know, it was one of the things we ever fought about was one of the men I chose to date. Yeah. And you were like, what in hell are you doing? Like, this person is not anywhere near worthy of your time or attention. But that is an example of grasping and trying to quickly rebuild the same life again with someone else. And that fell away. Thank God. Thank God that fell away. Because again, it wasn't in my highest good. Then the stage of, okay, ashes have fallen. Everything's now burned down to the ground. Then we get to the sifting for gold stage. That's the stage where we start to ask the questions, what do I really want? How have I not been brave enough to get what I really want? What are the limiting beliefs and fears that have kept me from reaching for the life that I truly desire? What do I really think versus what do other people think? That's a really big one, because when everything's burned down around you and you're in that vulnerable stage, to your point,
right,
it is so easy to rely on what other people think you should do and how other people think you should rebuild. Now, just remember, they may be in their limited belief system where they've built a life that isn't in line with their truth. So they're going to project to you shoulds and shouldn'ts, right, that are going to reflect building a life that's contracted, because they're in a life that's contracted.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So that sifting for gold is, what do I actually think? What do I know? What do I sense in my being? And then, of course, now you'll know why this matters to me so much. This is the moment where I think you reunite with your intuition the most poignantly.
Oh,
this is where I think you really feel and hear your higher self so clearly. Because when it's all burned down, then all of a sudden there's that voice that's like, no, it's okay. Keep going. It's okay. And when you hear that voice, we all have heard that voice at some stage in our life. When there's no other option, you're most likely to follow it, because it's like all of a sudden a life raft shows up and it's assuring you from within, if you listen to me, then we can make our way up and out of this place.
Now you're having me think about where I am in my Phoenix process from my foot break. I thought I was in a different section. I thought I was maybe a little further ahead, but now that you say it, I'm not. I guess there's no specific timeline. Yes.
Yeah. And your foot break could have been a little mini Phoenix process, right? So it's not going to have as intense of the stages as I'm mentioning around a divorce. Not to ever belittle it. I'm just saying we have different levels of this kind of change in our lives.
What's another example of like a mini Phoenix process can you think of?
A move. You know, it's not mini, but it's not as dramatic as that. But it definitely still requires you to think about, oh, what do I really want here? I mean, like, I think for me moving to California, I got to say, who do I want my friends to be?
Right.
Who are the kinds of people I want to be spending time with? How do I want to be perceived? You know, I want to be perceived as fully authentic. So how do I get to be that way? So I think that's an example. What I'm saying is there's a range. So if you're listening to this and you're not going through some traumatic life event, it doesn't mean it doesn't relate to you. There are all sorts of moments where the thing you thought you wanted falls away And the opportunity there is then to figure out, well, what's true about what I really want.
Agreed.
Okay, so those are the stages. And then the last stage is when we find the gold, we rebuild our image, we rebuild ourselves, we rise out of these ashes, fully aligned to our higher self, fully aligned to our truth, our dignity, in an empowered way that allows us to go towards what we desire with our purpose and really achieve what feels fulfilling to us, not to other people.
That's probably the hardest, is separating what other people are saying from what you are saying, what you just said. Because I also feel like society doesn't give us a lot of time in those moments to be down and to be sifting through the ashes. It's always like, oh yeah, you had your heartbreak or you had that situation. Now it's time to move forward. Let's keep working. Let's keep going. Let's keep going.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, when I thought about this episode, if you can think of anyone publicly that you, now that you know the stages and you understand the Phoenix process, like, what's an example of someone who's gone through something like this publicly?
The first person who comes to mind, which is very superficial and probably not the best example, but I'm going to use it, is when Brad Pitt left Jennifer Aniston for Angelina Jolie. And everyone started in with the, she didn't want to give him kids, she wasn't enough, all these things, and made her out to be this like spinster kind of woman who's never going to be happy, whatever have you. Plus, it turned out she was actually trying to have children, I just recently read, and was unable to. And he then left and adopted Angelina's kids, and they had kids, and then they adopted more kids. And I can't imagine how that must have felt for Jennifer Aniston in that moment. And in those times where she lost her marriage to infidelity and to then see him going on to live the life that they were attempting to live.
Right.
But then she came back like some badass bitch. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
Like, no, everybody totally felt that's so really sad. But now I feel like people look at her like she's awesome. Like, she hangs out with her friends all the time and she like works out and seems great.
That's I love that example. Yeah. And, you know, leave it to my bean to use Rachel from Friends.
Obviously.
Felt
appropriate.
Yeah, I think also like when you see public personalities go through addiction and beat addiction and come out of that space, and then, you know, so many of those people have a purpose of healing other people from addiction. So they'll write books, or they will start podcasts, or they'll be publicly, when they're being interviewed, they'll talk about it publicly, which makes other people who have addiction not feel so isolated and shameful. And that's super healing. So they go through this Phoenix process to come out of it as a healer of the very thing that was about to destroy their lives.
It's like Glennon Doyle and her book Untamed, which I just gifted to a friend of mine.
Yeah, exactly. I brought that up because I think that we don't give a lot of grace to public figures who are going through their Phoenix process. I think that we have a lot of judgment and we hurdle a lot of shame at people who are publicly living out this, the nest is on fire, it's burning down, now I've got to rebuild myself, but in front of millions of people. And we don't grant them a lot of dignity or privacy in that process.
I don't think we even grant regular Joe Schmoes a lot of dignity and privacy when they are going through their own private, you know, even with a local family getting divorced, it's a lot of assumptions and a lot of gossip and a lot of not, how can I support you? How can I be here for you? It's more like, what do you think happened? What's going on?
Right.
Yeah. So how can we then better support, I mean, public figures, one, but even friends or someone in your community who's struggling with this. We're not I don't like the word struggling because I think of the
going through
process,
this
as something empowering. Almost more positive, empowering.
I think that the best way to support someone that you see going through a Phoenix process or their life is quote unquote falling apart is to give them your time and your curiosity and attention, but not curiosity in an invasive way. All I mean by that is that you're not making assumptions, you know, not like, how could you leave that husband? He's amazing.
Right.
But
no judgment.
Just trying to understand them better and giving them your time and letting them know that you're there for them. And also, every time that someone makes a move that is about themselves, keeping the judgment of selfishness out of the picture.
Yes.
And really allowing them the grace to do what's best for them without, you know, casting a judgment on them.
Totally. I think we're painting like a really clear, like, first this happens, then this happens, then this happens. And I don't think that it always happens like so fluidly, I guess. Yeah. I'm thinking of my own situation, and I know that people have to get stuck in certain places, and it's
right.
It either takes more work to dig out or you can't find your way out.
Yeah.
So I want to know how you, I'm sure you're guiding plenty of people right now through a Phoenix process, how you advise them to be unstuck.
Yeah. Phoenix process is usually what brings people to my door.
Right.
You know, I think that it is very common to get stuck in different parts of this cycle. It is a cycle. You're right. It's circular. It's not linear. And I think that if you feel stuck in a certain part of this, like in the lows of it, in the sitting in the ashes, just looking at them and being like, oh my God, my life is over.
Which is understandable.
It's very understandable, which is step number one. Like, give yourself some compassion and grace. And I'm going through something really, really difficult right now, and I need to be gentle with myself. Don't be so hard on yourself. Lower your expectations for what you think you should be achieving and producing in the midst of this, you know, really difficult time in your life.
Drop the timeline is what I'm thinking right now. Drop it. Right. Like, don't say, well, I should be done. I should be through this in 6 months. Because I was just thinking, wait, maybe I'm still deeper in this than I thought. Why isn't this over yet? But really, why should it be over? Why is there a set time?
Yes, I love that. Drop the timeline. Give yourself compassion and grace. And then when you give yourself some space, start asking the questions that I mentioned. What do I really want? Why am I afraid of those things? Who has convinced me that wanting those things is not safe? Right. And recognizing that those are other people's limiting belief systems. And how am I going to find the courage to go after what I want, even when other people won't understand it? And remembering that they won't understand it because they're probably still living in their nest, in their contracted world. Anyone who has gone through a Phoenix process and watches you choose you first through your own will always support you, will always root for you to pick your truth. If they are not, that means they haven't gone through theirs and they're still living in the construction of that ideal life. And that's going to have to, you know, not always fall apart, but it's going to have to change if it's not in line with their truth. So if they're asking you not to be in line to your truth, it's because they're not in line with their truth.
Right. Got it. Wow.
I hope that's helpful.
Wow. It's given me a lot of food for thought.
All right, Bean. Let's do it. Melissa's famous takeaway.
Okay, my biggest takeaway is mostly that there is a lesson in everything. That this is a process, because with all shitty things that happen in life, you can always grow. Even you see it countless times with people who have suffered tremendous loss, and there are always those people who seem to be able to grow from it, and it feels really challenging, but you just have to keep looking for some type of positive message or something in there. Otherwise, you will just drown in it and your whole life will be drowning. So if you want to have a life of fulfillment, you have to rise from the ashes. You have to find something. You have to find a glimmer of yourself in there and grasp that and then grow from there.
Beautifully said. Thank you, Bean. Guys, if you are listening and you relate to this and you're going through any part of this Phoenix process, we are right there with you. We're thinking of you. You're not alone. We've been there, as we just shared. There's millions of people going through this right alongside you. Just know that you are going to rise from these ashes more badass and more yourself. You than ever
Mother
before.
Of dragons. Yes.
Yeah, that's right, mother of dragons. Thank you as always for listening. And if you want to support us, please do leave us a review anywhere that you're listening, and also share this show with anyone you think could benefit from it. Thank you guys. See you next week. Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted by me, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Grushka. Special thanks to my production team, Anushree Thekadeth, Arman Kassam, and Anais Islami. Don't forget to join us next week for another episode. See you then.